Well, that was about as bad of a football weekend as you can imagine, right? I don't know, where do you even start?
I'd like to tell you I know what Green Bay's doing on defense, but I just don't.
That's as good a place as any. It also might just be a recurring theme of the show. Welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Of course, it is always easy to connect with the show. We love hearing from you, both on Twitter and Instagram. Our username is at Doug Russell Pod. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on YouTube and Facebook and email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. We've also got a brand new website. It has been redesigned. It's got all of our old shows. It's got our YouTube videos. It's got our social medias. Everything is just all encompassed in one. I think that it just looks fantastic. It's very simple. DougRussellPod.com. There you go. That's it. www.DougRussellPod.com. All right, let's start with the Packers and their comedy of errors.
Ball's on the ground as Rodgers got out of there fast. Colts have it. On first and 20 now, Rodgers passes. Picks. Intercepted by Indianapolis and Rock Yassin.
Rivers on play action, has time in the pocket, floats it upfield. The pass is caught. Michael Pittman, 20. He's in the 15, comes back 10. 5, touchdown. Michael Pittman from 45 yards out. Run out in the catch for the rookie out of USC. His first career touchdown. Touchdown, INDY.
I'd like to tell you I know what Green Bay's doing on defense, but I just don't.
The 7-point game here in Indianapolis as the Packers get it back. This one checks up inside the 5, and Shepard had to play it. He thought it was going into the end zone, and it checked up as it hit at the 1 and went backward.
He can't believe this.
Second down and 9. Empty set for Rivers, has time, dancing the pocket, throws upfield, and it's caught right, and that is Trey Burton. Touchdown! Touchdown, INDY! 17-yard strike on the money. Phillip Rivers to Trey Burton, and the Colts have their second touchdown of the night.
I'd like to tell you I know what Green Bay's doing on defense, but I just don't.
Shepard brings it from inside the 5. Ball's out! Ball came out. Colts say they have it. And they do.
Two receivers go left and right. Rivers looks that way, throws up field. The ball's caught at the goal line, and it is secured for a catch. It is a touchdown for the Colts.
I'd like to tell you I know what Green Bay's doing on defense, but I just don't.
Valdez Scantling falls out. And the Colts.
Here's a snap, ball's down. Kick is on the way, and it's through! It went in! And the Colts win it! A walk-off winner for Rodrigo Blankenship!
I thought the effort, the energy was as good as we've had all year long. You know, it started in practice. I thought the guys were locked in, they were into it, they came ready to play. But when you're playing a good football team, or any team for that matter, and you lose the turnover battle 4-2, it's tough to come out on top.
I'd like to tell you I know what Green Bay's doing on defense, but I just don't.
Play-by-play courtesy of Fox Sports and 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis. The final score in overtime, the Colts beat the Packers 34-31. That's what the final score says. What everything else indicates is that this was a terribly played game, especially after halftime. Coach Matt LaFleur.
When we're struggling on offense or vice versa, we needed to bail our defense out in terms of they had two long drives and you have to convert third down. And they were third and short situations, or at least the second one was, and we had a batted ball. So, you know, sometimes things like that happen and you need one of the units to step up and kind of stop the bleeding, so to speak.
First drive, obviously we're moving the ball, big play on the first down, first play of the game. And then, you know, obviously, you know, fumbling the exchange there. It was frustrating, but we know what type of offense we've had this year. It's been pretty efficient. The only thing that's been stopping us for the most part has been ourselves and not converting third downs and turning the ball over today obviously hurt us really bad.
quarterback Aaron Rodgers, whose numbers weren't bad. Overall, 27 for 38, 311 yards, three touchdowns. He did have one interception, but a quarterback rating of 110.7. You take a look at some of the other numbers, though, and it makes you wonder about the game plan. Aaron Jones, 10 carries for 41 yards. His longest was a 15-yarder that he ripped off. He only averaged 4.1 yards per carry. As far as the receiving core, Devontae Adams was targeted just 8 times. Usually he's in double digits. He did catch 7 of those balls for 106 yards. Robert Tonyan caught all 5 of his passes. Aaron Jones did catch 4 out of the backfield. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, whom we'll talk about coming up in just a couple of minutes, caught 3 of his balls as well for 55 yards. But, of course, the one fumble. Obviously, we'll get to that as well. So Aaron spread the ball around. But as far as Indianapolis is concerned, you know, Phillip Rivers, 24 of 36, 288 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Those numbers are fine as well. And you also have to look at, you know, the fact that he didn't have one receiver that was targeted more than 4 times, and that was Jonathan Taylor out of the backfield. Even Michael Pittman Jr., who caught the long 45-yard touchdown pass, there for a score of the game, he only was targeted 3 times throughout the entire game. This game was really, really sloppy. You look at penalties, the Packers, 7 penalties for 45 yards. That's not great, but you can live with that most of the time. The Colts had 8 penalties for 116 yards. That's atrocious. That is not winning football. Anytime you have triple digits in penalty yardage, you usually lose the game. The Packers, however, turned the ball over 4 times, 3 of them on fumbles. The Packers' special teams was atrocious. The defense was confused and out of position constantly. The short yardage play calls were confusing. The players looked completely unprepared. They lacked fundamentals and discipline. There is almost nothing, as a Packers fan, good that you can take away from this disaster. 4 turnovers, as I mentioned. At one point, a complete lack of awareness where your kick returner was on the field. At least that one didn't cost them, but it almost did. If not for replay, it would have cost them. If not for the ball traveling an extra, 3 inches and hitting the goal line? How does Darius Shepherd, how does any NFL player, I know that Tyler Irvin is your preferred kick returner and he's not available, but it's not like Darius Shepherd's never done this before. How does Darius Shepherd let that ball hit? How does that happen? That's inexcusable. If you don't know where the ball is, take it out. If it's close to the goal line, take it out. Give yourself a chance. Give your team an opportunity. But this team's special teams have been awful pretty much all year long. J.K. Scott wasn't good yesterday. At least Mason Crosby was good. But this was, again, a disaster. But the kicker, again, is that it's not like the Colts played a very good game either. As I mentioned, over 100 yards in penalties. And they still won. If you can couple this with the Badgers game on Saturday, which we'll get to, most of us saw a lot of lousy football this weekend. But as far as the Packers, Matt LaFleur, Mike Pettine, special teams coach Sean Menenga, they all wear this one. They all own this one. This was a tale of two halves. The Packers led by 2 touchdowns, 28-14, led by 2 touchdowns at halftime. Offensive line was blocking pretty well. Aaron had time to throw, completed over 80% of his passes. He was spreading it around. I don't know what happened at halftime, but it was a complete reversal of fortunes. It looked like Mike Pettine had it in his mind that, all right, well, the Colts are down by 2 touchdowns. They're just going to start winging it all over the field because that's what most teams do. So what Mike Pettine does is he puts in what is called the heavy dime package. Basically, what that means is that Raven Green, typically, obviously a safety, he moves up to play an inside linebacker. You get a little smaller, you get a little bit faster. So I get what he was thinking. The Colts didn't exactly run the ball very well in the first half, less than 50 yards total. They were down by 2 touchdowns, so I understand. What I don't get is how slow Mike Pettine was to adjust. The Colts, instead of throwing the ball like most of us had assumed, it was the Jonathan Taylor show. They ran the ball 8 straight times to open up the second half. And again, the Packers, small and fast, with a safety at linebacker to play the pass. and the Packers got, again, out-physicaled, which happens way too much when they're not playing heavy dime, much less when they are playing heavy dime. Mike Pettine not available after the game. That's standard around the NFL. Not worried about that. But Matt LaFleur was asked if his defense is good enough to win it all after the game was over.
Yeah, I think so. I just think that there's got to be more consistency, and certainly we'll go back and look at the tape and see what we did well and the areas we needed to improve upon. I think obviously that what stands out is it seemed like they were pretty effective in running the football, especially in the second half, and that's an area that we're going to have to clean up and continue to get better at.
So Matt LaFleur thinks that his defense is good enough to win it all when all is said and done at the Super Bowl in Tampa. I respectfully disagree with him, but I guess we're going to find out. So that was the Packers' defense in the second half. Their offense collectively went on a milk carton in the second half because they didn't do anything. After their first three and out, though, the Colts went back to the pass, but by that time the Packers' defense was gassed. Still,
just two third downs we didn't convert, and that was our only possessions there in the third quarter. They brought maybe a couple more pressures, but nothing really different. The first one I thought Quez based on his release might be expecting back shoulder, or even anticipating back shoulder, and weren't on the same page. And then the second one, the ball got tipped on a slant to Tay, so I don't think there's really a whole lot of change. They ran man coverage in the first half. We just missed the opportunities there in the third quarter.
Yeah, you know, nothing to see here. Just a couple of third down conversions that we didn't get. But what that meant was the Packers, with back-to-back three and outs, ran a total of six offensive plays in the third quarter. Their first down of the second half came about halfway through the fourth quarter. The Colts dominated the time of possession, 11 minutes and 22 seconds to 3 minutes and 38 seconds. That was the third quarter. That's how the momentum changed almost on a dime. But at least the Packers were able to, after they fell behind, they were able to tie it, and the ball game goes into overtime. There's a lot of nuance in this game, but this is going to be the play that's always going to be remembered in Packers lore.
Valdez Scantling falls out. And the Colts have it. The rookie, Julian Blackman, knocked it out.
Obviously a terrible play. Nobody's excusing the play that Marquez Valdez-Scantling had. But after it seemed like he had turned the corner, that happens. We've talked a lot about his drops. Matt LaFleur, however, was asked, how can you live with this?
I know he's really hurting right now. He made so many plays for us, and not only in the pass game, but in the run game. Stuff that you guys probably don't even notice, that we're not getting the yardage that we get if he's not blocking his ass off. So I can live with MVS. He continues to get better each and every day. Every time we go out there, he's providing big plays. I mean, you can't forget about the PI that he drew at the end of the half on the 2-yard line or whatever it was that led to a touchdown. So I can live with the MVS, and we're going to continue to live with him.
Yeah, it happens, unfortunately. You know, a lot of it's fundamentals, you know, carrying the ball, but I've had my fair share of fumbles. It's just bad timing, obviously. I'm just trying to get a first down there and reset the downs. You know, it's a good play by the nickel. I'm kind of trying to split Allen and Bobby there, but I think the ball is just a little loose. But that stuff happens. He made a big play at the end of regulation to kind of get us going on third and 10, and disappointed for him, disappointed for us.
After the game, MVS on Twitter said that he received death threats on social media, which, come on, I mean, enough is enough. Death threats over a sporting event, death threats over people in politics just doing their jobs properly. This death threat thing, it's got to stop. This is not how a civilized society operates. So stop it. If you know anyone who does that, tell them to stop it. If you do it yourself, shame on you. It has no place in sports. It has no place anywhere. People are allowed to do their jobs. And sometimes they're going to fail at doing their jobs. It's bad enough that he feels like he lost the Packers this game. It wasn't just MVS. The Packers played a lousy football game overall. All right. I asked you after the game to complete this sentence. I asked you this on Facebook. Finish this sentence. Today's Packers game was fill in the blank. We got 66 responses. Here are some of them. Jim writes, frustrating, end of rant. Not much of a rant, but I'll take it. Jonathan writes, just very simply, today's Packers game was shit. All right, I'll take it. Let's see. Chris writes, Today's Packers game was revealing of how this team doesn't have what it takes. Fair enough. Bruce writes, okay, the syntax here is what it is, but I'm just going to read it. It's one run-on sentence without any grammar or punctuation. So take that for what it's worth. Finish the sentence. Today's Packers game was, let's just the defense can't keep a 14-point lead and they any team back in the game regardless who they play. If it was 96 Packers playing this game, they would never give up a lead like that in a game. That's facts. Okay. Thank you, Bruce. Finish this sentence. Today's Packers game was, Doug Pike writes, sloppy. Sharon Duschendorf writes, disappointing. Jeff writes, a debacle, crappy end to a crappy Wisconsin sports week. That's fair. Eric Rupnow, someone who I've known for a long time, a fraternity brother of mine, writes, fraud perpetuated by Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Okay. that's actually pretty funny. Kevin writes, today's Packers game was another loss that they had no business losing. Clarence writes, frustrating, careless turnovers, bad coaching. Betsy writes, a clear side that Pettin needs to move on. Probably not going to happen before the end of the season, but Sunday was not his finest performance. Paul writes, flagged way too much. Anton writes, pathetic. Jason writes, a typical Wisconsin downer. Ron Reed writes, so 2020. Eric writes, the first half awesome, second half the team went home. Jermaine Jackson puts the poop emoji. Just that, just the poop emoji. Today's game was the poop emoji. Brian writes, sloppy. Trevor writes, yes, the game was okay, but it would still be nice if it was free. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Christy writes, so underwhelming. Yerk writes, awesome. I should note that Yerk is my cousin who lives in Indiana, who's a Colts fan. So thanks, Yerk. Chris writes, a retro game in Forrest Gregg style. Andy writes, the same story. They did nothing in the offseason to address the run defense, and they cannot defend the run. That's not necessarily why they lost. Alex writes, confusing. That's fair. Ryan Nowak writes, to be fair, Green Bay stinks in Indy, which is true. We'll get to that in a minute. John writes, winnable if it weren't for the turnovers. That's what I keep going back to. And Thomas writes, careless. And there are others that kind of go on and say generally the same thing. This was a sloppy game. It was frustrating. It was a lousy game that the Packers played in. So you can't dwell on it forever, though. You've got to turn the page and look forward. The Packers have the Chicago Bears coming up on Sunday Night Football. It's the first time that they've seen the Bears this season. After that, they're at home against Philadelphia, at Detroit. Then they come home for two home games, one against Carolina, one against Tennessee. And then they finish up on January 3rd at Chicago against the Bears. All right, so let's take a look at their opponents for a second. The Bears, who they see twice right now, they're 5-5, but they're going nowhere fast. They've lost four in a row. They've got five very close wins, four of them against teams with losing records. So that's the Bears. The Eagles are 3-6-1, but are somehow in first place in the wretched NFC East. The Panthers are 4-7, so the only team that the Packers have left with a winning record is Tennessee at 7-3. But the path is clear. Even with the loss, Green Bay still has a two-game lead in the division over Chicago, but they've got to get it together. The Colts were awful yesterday, too. It's not like they deserve to win, but it might have been the worst NFL game of the weekend. That leads me to I don't know what to say about the Badgers either. The Packers and Badgers had similar matchups in a lot of ways. Northwestern is a good team, like the Colts are. Northwestern is one of the best teams in the country at creating turnovers and stopping the run. And Ryan Field, like the city of Indianapolis, has been a house of horrors for the Packers. The Packers have never won in exactly two NFL cities. One of them is still Indianapolis. The other is Buffalo. You can wow your friends at the bar with that. Well, don't go to the bar, you know, after COVID. A virtual bar. A Zoom bar. A socially distanced bar. You know what I mean. But there's your trivia question. What are the two cities that the Packers have never won in? Indianapolis and Buffalo. Now, the Badgers obviously have won at Northwestern. They played there far more often than the Packers play at either Indy or Buffalo. But since the turn of the century, the Badgers are 1-6 at Ryan Field. So this is a modern-day house of horrors. Even when there isn't that much scoring for Wisconsin, it's a house of horrors.
First and goal from the 2. Ramsey has an open man and a touchdown. Charlie Mangieri, the backup tight end, with his first touchdown of the season. Ramsey 15 out of 19. Most of them short throws. This one's a long throw.
Beautiful throw.
And it's for RCB, and it's a touchdown.
ABC Sports on both of those calls, the 2 touchdowns that Northwestern was able to get on Saturday. All right, so take away 2 key elements, and Wisconsin wins this game. So you take a look at the whole stat sheet that kind of spells out wins versus losses. And you go down by, okay, how many first downs did Wisconsin get? How many did Northwestern get? Wisconsin had 21 first downs. Wisconsin had 5 more first downs in this game than Northwestern did, 21-16. 11 of those first downs came on the ground. 10 of them came through the air. That's great balance. Whereas for Northwestern, almost all of theirs came in the passing game. Only 1 came on the rush game, and 4 by penalty. We'll get to that in a second. Yards on the ground. Wisconsin ran the ball for 136 yards on 40 carries. Northwestern ran the ball 23 times, and they only got 24 yards. Neither team scored on the ground. Net yards rushing. The Badgers outran Northwestern 177 yards to 41 yards. Okay, so clearly the Badgers had the better running game. Great. What about passing? That's where you're going to see the big discrepancy, right? No, you're not. Passing yardage for Wisconsin, 230. Passing yardage for Northwestern, 239. Passing touchdowns for Wisconsin, 1, for Northwestern, 2. Obviously, part of the big difference in the game. Average yards per completion, 10 for both. Total offensive yards, Wisconsin had more than 100 total yards than Northwestern did. Wisconsin ran 14 more plays, 82-68. Wisconsin outgained Northwestern, 4.5 yards per play on average versus 3.9 yards per play on average. But then you look at the killers. Turnovers, penalties, third down conversions. That's where this game was lost by the Wisconsin Badgers. That's it. 3 interceptions and 2 fumbles. Wisconsin lost the turnover battle 5-1.
You know, everyone's got to take a look at areas and ways that we can improve upon. But we had some pre-snap penalties that against a good defense, that's going to make it that much harder and have to learn from it and grow from it. And this was a tough loss in many ways, but you can't lose to Northwestern twice. We got to learn from it. And it's all about going forward. You've got to take care of the football. And we knew going in, Northwestern has done a great job of getting takeaways. And we put our team in a bad spot. You know, I thought our defense responded in a lot of situations, but you got to score points to win.
Badgers coach Paul Christ, who added the team's 3-for-16 performance and third down conversions, is unacceptable as well. On the flip side, this is a team that was decimated by injuries at wide receiver and has a lack of experience right now at running back. So up step the freshman.
Jalen ran hard and well, and Chim continues to, you know, give us some plays. And actually, we're trying to get him going on a couple other things, and it just never quite got to him. And I think Nick's been playing well, and they need to be, you know, at this point. We are counting on him.
Jalen Berger, Shamir DK, and Nick Herbig specifically. Still, Wisconsin was without their top 2 receivers, Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor.
Yeah, I thought we had some good things going offensively, but you turn the ball over, it's going to make it hard, especially when it's on a short field. And, you know, certainly, you know, you want to be with all your guys, but it's I don't think that was the story tonight.
As for the numbers, Graham Mertz, 23 of 41, 230 yards, the one touchdown, and yes, the three interceptions. As far as the running game, Jalen Berger really stepped up well, 15 carries for 93 yards, averaged 6.2 yards per carry. On the receiving end of Graham Mertz's passes, I think we're going to be saying this a lot, even when Kendrick Pryor and Danny Davis are in the lineup, Jake Ferguson, your leading receiver, caught 7 balls for 58 yards. And Paul Christ mentioned Shamir Dike, the freshman, true freshman out of Waukesha North, 2 receptions for 52 yards, although 49 of them came on the one long touchdown catch. He's got speed to burn, and I think he's going to be a big, big part of this Wisconsin offense moving forward. So, overall, yeah, it was a sloppy game. I'm not going to panic, though, about one bad game from a freshman quarterback starting his third career contest. Graham Mertz is going to be fine.
That was a great learning experience for me and how to respond and how to grow from it. And for me, it's turn on the film tomorrow and seeing what, just replaying the game in my head and really just in the end, it all comes back to learning. And I guarantee you that will never happen again.
Don't guarantee that because it might, but I love where this kid's confidence is. I think that Graham Mertz is going to be just fine. I saw on social media, has Graham Mertz been someone who's been completely overhyped? Let's pump the brakes. This is starting his third game. He's a freshman, for crying out loud. Everybody just relax. And don't come back on the bandwagon after this kid leads the Wisconsin Badgers maybe even into the college football playoffs. I think that this team is this good. Maybe not in 2020, but moving forward. So let's take a look at the rest of the season. The Badgers right now 2-1. Of course, they had to cancel their games against Nebraska and Purdue. They've got Minnesota coming up this weekend on the 28th. And then at home against Indiana, a very tough Indiana, number 12 Indiana. And then they finish up the season on December 12th at Iowa. You look at the standings right now, the path to the Big Ten championship game, I don't think that it's going to happen this year because you have to have the Badgers win out and Northwestern lose twice. Remember, Northwestern obviously now has the tiebreaker, the head-to-head. So if you look at the Big Ten West, Northwestern is sitting there at 5-0. Wisconsin is 2-1, followed by 3-2 Iowa, 2-2 Purdue, 2-3 Minnesota and Illinois, and then Nebraska bringing up the rear. Over in the East, Ohio State's 4-0, Indiana's 4-1. Obviously, Ohio State now, after their win against Indiana on Saturday, they hold the tiebreaker. So, I mean, you can pencil it in right now. It's going to be Ohio State and Northwestern. That's your Big Ten championship game. Again, it's happened a couple of times, and it'll happen again this year. Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, Rutgers, all the also-rans of the Big Ten. So you can pencil that one in. Saturday's game was poorly played. It was also poorly officiated, absolutely. But this is a program that's still on the rise. The young players and the ones that are coming in, this is the best Wisconsin has ever done in recruiting. So can we question some play calls here and there? Yeah, sure, absolutely. I would have kicked the field goal with 2 minutes and some change left instead of going for it on 4th and 6th at the 36. It's a 51-yard field goal attempt. I like those odds better than 4th and 6. A field goal, if it would have been, you know, attempted and made, that would have cut the lead to 7. It's a calculated risk either way, but what's done is done. Minnesota, meanwhile, that's what's coming up next for Wisconsin on Saturday. Finally, today we have to talk about the Bucks. A week ago, it looked like they were in the driver's seat. We did a special show on Tuesday to even talk about it. Reports had surfaced that they had pulled off 2 trades that could vault them to the top of the Eastern Conference. The Bucks and Kings reached an agreement in principle on a sign and trade that would have brought Bogdan Bogdanovic and Justin James to the Bucks. The Kings would have gotten Dante DiVincenzo, DJ Wilson, and Ersan Ilyasova. Now, problem is, Bogdanovic never agreed to the sign and trade, and it was apparently done before the moratorium had ended. So that deal fell apart, and now there's an investigation underway. Bogdanovic, he signed an offer sheet with the Hawks. The Kings can match it. The Bucks don't have the money under the cap to sign him. Instead, veterans DJ Augustine and Bobby Portis, they are reportedly coming to Milwaukee. Pat Connaughton will be back as well. Portis, according to reports, gets a 2-year, $8 million contract. It includes an option for a second year. That is the Bucks' biannual exception. Augustine, meanwhile, gets a reported three-year, $21 million contract. That means that he'll take up most of the Bucks' mid-level exception of $9.2 million. So any amount that Augustine makes, and this is getting deep into the weeds, which is important for what I'll get to here in a second, but any amount that Augustine makes will be more than the taxpayer mid-level exception of about $5.7 million. There's a lot of numbers here. So the Bucks look like they're choosing to use the biannual exception or more than the taxpayer mid-level exception, which will hard cap the Bucks at $138.9 million for the rest of the season. That's according to number cruncher Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Listen, I know there's a lot of numbers there. I apologize for that, but that's the background of where the Bucks are right now. So based on the reported new contracts of Augustine, Portis, and Connaughton, the Bucks right now, and this is important, will only have minimum deals to dole out for the rest of the roster. Considering they're hard capped, it's possible they'll only go with 14 players instead of 15 on the roster. That's fine. That 15th guy almost never plays. And listen, they're going to need the flexibility just in case something happens. So there's a couple of things at play here. The Bucks maybe need a full-time capologist, number one. The NBA collective bargaining agreement is 538 pages of legal speak. And while your general manager is supposed to know everything, his biggest job, his number one job, is talent evaluation, not the nuances of a 538-page document. Should he know a little bit about it? Yeah, absolutely. But you need a math nerd to dive into this. The buck stops with John Horst, no pun intended. But he's got to take ultimate responsibility for this whole Bogdanovich fiasco. He's also to blame for apparently not having someone on staff whose job it is to know the CBA back and forth and can advise him on what contracts to do and to how to properly structure them. Listen, I like John Horst a lot. I know him personally. I think the world of him. NBA Executive of the Year two seasons ago, 100% deservedly so. He's built a roster that has been able to contend for the Eastern Conference crown. They haven't gotten over the top, but he's put this roster together, I think, masterfully. One thing that he may struggle with right now, however, is contract structure. I do think that the Bucks did the best anyone could reasonably expect them to do with what was handed to them after the Bogdanovich deal fell apart. But I also, again, think that the Bucks need to have somebody, okay, you can structure it this way, and this way, and this will give you flexibility to do this, this, and this. It's worth the investment if you're a contending team. So this is what the Bucks roster unofficially looks like right now. Your point guards are Jrue Holiday and DJ Augustine. Your shooting guards are Dante DiVincenzo. Yes, he's back. Pat Connaughton, Sam Merrill, who's new to the team, obviously, in the draft. Your small forwards, Chris Middleton, Justin Nwora, Thanasis Adetokounmpo, power forward Giannis, and DJ Wilson, obviously back with the Bucks after that trade didn't go through. Your centers, Brooke Lopez and now Bobby Portis. I love Jrue Holiday. Bobby Portis brings some toughness and some intensity to the team, and I think DJ Augustine has been one of the more underrated players in the game for a decade. But the Bogdanovich situation is going to be one that lingers for a while, a public unforced error that could have major repercussions from the league if they apply sanctions and for the Bucks if they can't get Giannis to sign the Supermax. And finally, my return to the national airwaves is later this week. What are you talking about, Doug? I'll be doing some fill-in shows on SportsMap Radio. It's a company I've got a lot of history with. SportsMap was formerly known as SB Nation Radio. It was Yahoo Sports Radio before that and Sporting News Radio before that. It has been, you know, in my 30 years of broadcasting, it's been one of two places that I've truly called my radio home. The other being WTMJ, which I'm, of course, no longer at. But SportsMap right now is based in Houston. They used to be based in Chicago, but I've worked in both the Houston and Chicago offices. I worked in Houston when they were called Yahoo Sports Radio. But since we now all have home studios in 2020, thanks COVID. I'll be using the studio that I'm using right now for 3 days. So if you're interested in checking it out, I'm not sure. I think that there's an affiliate in Appleton, the game in Appleton. I'm not sure of any other Wisconsin affiliates. I'm sure they're out there, but you can find it on the app, SportsMap Radio app, or online at sportsmapradio.com. Thursday from 1 until 4 in the afternoon. That's Thanksgiving Day. Friday from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m., and then Saturday from 1 p.m. until 5 p.m. So again, Thanksgiving Day, early afternoon, late morning, midday on Friday, on Black Friday. So take me with you if you would like. And then Saturday from 1 until 5. We will have a Friday podcast. We'll have a complete look at the Badgers game against the Golden Gophers, as well as the Packers Sunday Night Football game against the Bears. So be sure to tune us in on Friday as well as on Wednesday. A very special guest coming up on the podcast. Want to be sure to stick around for that. Until then, you can find us on our socials. Our username on both Twitter and Instagram is at Doug Russell Pod. Search for the Doug Russell Podcast on YouTube and Facebook. Email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. And for all of that in one simple, easy place, you can get our videos. You can get our show downloads and archives. Very simple. DougRussellPod.com. Special guest again coming up on Wednesday. And then we'll also see you on Friday. Have a great Thanksgiving week. Take us with you wherever you go, right here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a good one.